Pope Benedict XVI on Sunday greeted pilgrims and visitors from across the globe at his regular Angelus address. Speaking from his summer residence at Castel Gandolfo, the Pope reflected on this Sunday's Gospel reading before welcoming a group of religious leaders from Kazakhstan and a group of cyclists who had just completed a pilgrimage from Canterbury to Rome. Here's my colleague Charles Collins with all the details of what the Pope had to say.
In Sunday's Angelus, Pope Benedict spoke about the perplexing passage from Holy Scriptures quoted in this Sunday's liturgy. When Jesus said, "Strive to enter through the narrow gate, for many, I tell you, will attempt to enter, but will not be strong enough."
Non ci sono privilegiati. Il passaggio alla vita eterna è aperto a tutti.
The Holy Father says in Christianity there are not privileged gateways, and that the gateway to eternal life is open to all, but is narrow because it's demanding. He said Christians must imitate Mary, the Mother of God, who is humble of heart and is called the Gate of Heaven. After the Angelus, the Pope addressed a group of Muslim, Orthodox, Lutheran, and Catholic religious leaders from Kazakhstan, who, following meetings in Padua and Assisi, will visit the Vatican.
To the Muslim, Orthodox, Lutheran, and Catholic religious leaders from Kazakhstan present to this Angelus, I wish to extend warm greetings. Your gathering in Assisi and in Padua, together with your meetings in the Vatican, are a sure sign of the hope that mutual understanding and respect between religious communities can overcome distrust and promotes a way of peace which springs from truth. Be assured of my prayers for the success of your visit, and may your efforts bear much fruit for the noble land of Kazakhstan and beyond. Thank you.
The Holy Father also greeted the Canterbury bicycle pilgrimage.
I welcome the participants in the cycling pilgrimage from Canterbury Cathedral to Rome. You have cycled the traditional Via Francigena, following in the footsteps of the many men and women of faith on their way to the tombs of Peter and Paul. I pray that your visit will be a time of spiritual and ecumenical enrichment. May Christ keep you and your families in his love.
Thanks there to Charles Collins for that report on Pope Benedict's Angelus address. A time of profound spiritual enrichment, but also a time of severe physical challenges. That's how one of the organisers of that pilgrimage from Canterbury to Rome describes the two-week journey along the ancient Via Francigena, first recorded in the writings of the 10th century Archbishop of Canterbury, Sigeric, on his way back from a visit to the Pope.
The Via Francigena is the ancient Frankish way from Rome to Northern Europe. It was a route of trade, a route of commerce, and a route of travel and pilgrimage as well. And in the last 10 years or so, it's been recreated.
Canon Edward Condrey is treasurer at Canterbury Cathedral and a cycling enthusiast. He, his wife Sarah, and his 16-year-old son Jerome were among the 33 intrepid pilgrims who made the journey to raise some much-needed funds for restoration work on the ancient Canterbury Cathedral. The pilgrimage ended on Sunday with Vespers in St. Peter's Basilica. But just before they headed back to Britain, I caught up with Edward to find out more about this journey.
It was a small group of us who've been cycling friends for some time. We looked for the next challenge, and I suggested Rome and Canterbury, and to my surprise everyone said yes, and there's been an enormous number of people wanted to do it, and in fact I've turned people away and said, no, we can't cope with any more, they can't get enough hotel rooms, and we'll block all the roads between Rome and Canterbury.
So the main idea was to raise money, or was it more of a cycling challenge, as you say?
I think the original idea was a physical adventure, but because it was Rome and Canterbury, it then became, for some, a spiritual pilgrimage as well. It's a very typical model of how pilgrimages work. People go for all kinds of different motives, some have spiritual reasons, some physical challenge, but my experience of pilgrimage is that everybody who goes in some ways feels changed, whether they are explicitly Christian or not. The experience itself is very significant for them.
And how about the makeup of your group? Were you all Anglican? Were you a mixture of Christian denominations, people of no faith even?
A mixture and people of no faith. One Roman Catholic girl, majority, I suppose, Anglicans, and quite a lot who don't go to church, and one or two are very anti-church, in fact. And we all went along. I think the best thing about the journey was that the 33 people who completed it, including the six supporters, just worked together in a very diverse range of people. There was a judge, the chief executive of the city council in Canterbury, teachers, someone who works on a boat that goes out of a port in Kent, five school students, someone who's retired. The youngest was 16, the oldest 66. And yet somehow, wonderfully, everyone got along together and worked together, and all the diverse gifts worked together and made something much, much bigger out of it.
There must have been problems along the way, though, weren't there? Personality clashes, perhaps. Tell us about some of the downsides.
There were some. I mean, particularly at the beginning, people inevitably, when they get tired, physically tired, get grumpy with each other, and I got as grumpy as anybody. But that's all part of sorting each other out. And I think one of the most important things about pilgrimage is that you, when you go away, whether you go on a holiday or on a pilgrimage, that the one thing you take with you is yourself. And you can't escape that, inevitably, because you're there, and somehow it strips that away. And being with such a good group and such a big group, you come to see other people accepting you for what you are, because they get to know you. You can't hide anymore behind the facade. And I think it's particularly good for a priest to kind of realise that you can't pretend that you're the kind of perfect person you wish you were, that people realise how imperfect you are, and that you do lose your temper and get uptight at inappropriate moments, but they still get on with it, and they still accept you, and they still want to be with you, and you enjoy their company, and that's been great.
What about the spiritual side of it? As you say, a diverse group, some people with no faith, some people very much seeing this as a spiritual pilgrimage. Were there moments of prayer along the way, for example?
Oh, yes. As a group, I offered prayer and a communion service as well, and I suppose about half the group came to that. But also along the way, people welcomed us into their churches in Aulla in northern Italy. The local priest had written a prayer for us in Italian, had it translated into English, and welcomed us into his church and said his prayer and gave us his blessing. The abbot of St. Maurice in Switzerland gave us a late night tour in the dark, which was just wonderful. And again, those of faith and no faith all commented on what an important moments those things were. But I think there's a danger also that you distinguish between what is faith and not faith and what is holy and secular. That one of the most holy and sacred things, in a way, the special thing, was the fact that a group of people ordinary people, achieved something extraordinary. Because we're not all athletes. Two or three of us were athletes, but good cyclists. But the rest of us were just ordinary people who enjoyed doing something. And that extraordinary thing is of a group working together is actually very holy to me. But speaks of God.
Tell us a bit more about some of the main highlights, if you like, along the way. You mentioned a couple of obviously very moving moments. What perhaps were the most interesting things for you along this route?
It was a tremendous challenge, and therefore, for example, getting to the top of the St. Bernard Pass, which is the route of the Via Francigena, which was the route we were following. I think it's 2,200 metres high, and that was a tremendous challenge, and everybody made it. And I think at the beginning, at breakfast that morning, one or two people looked as though they were about to face the guillotine. They didn't actually think they'd make it to the top, but everyone did. And again, people were working together. And so when one person was in trouble, people stayed with them and helped them up and got them to the top.
This route can only be done at certain times of the year, can't it, because of that pass across the Alps?
Yes, the Via Francigena is the ancient Frankish way from Rome to northern Europe. It was a route of trade, a route of commerce, and a route of travel and pilgrimage as well. And in the last 10 years or so, it's being recreated, which is wonderful. And increasing numbers are travelling the route from Canterbury to Rome and Rome to Canterbury. And the route we know about because the Archbishop of Canterbury in 990, Sigeric, travelled that route and recorded on his way back from Rome to see the Pope, recorded the 80 places where he stopped overnight, so we know precisely the route that he took. And so now it's followed again. And unfortunately for cyclists and walkers, he went over the Grand St. Bernard. He wasn't sensible and went down the Rhone Valley and went round the coast, which would have been a lot easier, but it was just wonderful.
Is it something you'd do again?
A pilgrimage and a physical challenge. Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean, some crazy people are talking of going from Rome to Canterbury next year, but I'm not sure. But we'll find something else to do, because it was such a good experience as a group to do together.
When we think of pilgrimage, of course, we think back to Chaucer and his Canterbury Tales. Are any of you likely to publish your memoirs of this extraordinary adventure together?
I don't think so much publish. I think the Canterbury Tales, which was a tale of Chaucer's, the great early English writer who told the tales of a group of diverse people travelling along the way, telling their stories. And that's really what's happened, that we've all got to know each other in a way that you would never normally get to know each other in normal life, because you've had to live with each other in quite extreme physical circumstances, because people do get very tired, exhausted. But we've listened to each other's stories in the way that Chaucer wrote about. Also, I think, in the way that Jesus did in the end of Luke's Gospel on the way to Emmaus, that when he came across the sad disciples, devastated disciples, after the crucifixion, walking away from Jerusalem, he first of all listened to their stories. He didn't try to talk about himself or try to convert them. Or his mission, his purpose, his way of evangelizing was actually to listen to the people and what they had to say first, even when they didn't recognize him. And that's very much what's happened here, and been my experience on other pilgrimages as well.
There's a very practical side to all this as well. You've raised a lot of money, haven't you, for Canterbury Cathedral and the repairs that are so necessary there?
Yes, I mean, in the UK there's no government money for, no taxes that go towards church finance, whether for charitable work or for restoration. So the bill is £50 million, which is vast. And we've raised about £110,000, I think.
In sponsorship,
of which about 30 will go also to other charities, both local and national charities, like local hospices for the dying, as well as international charities like the UK charity Christian Aid.
So it's been a very worthwhile mission.
Oh,
in this
it's been
sense
wonderful.
As well.
Yes, yeah. Along the way, we've eaten, I think, 1,500 bananas and 600 loaves of bread and probably 600 bowls of pasta and 40 very large fruitcakes cooked by members of the cathedral congregation, which was just brilliant. And the support team have been fantastic. We had six people along with us who just looked after us fantastically all the way.
A real team effort.
It was. I mean, it really was. And what was so brilliant was it was such a diverse group of people that if I'd said at the beginning I would choose the people I would go with, I would have chosen people like me because, you know, all friends and who I knew. I didn't know all these people. And yet somehow, wonderfully, they all got together and all contributed, whether it was the ability to cook, the ability to mend bicycles, the ability to find the way, the ability to organise the finance. Just everybody contributed what they had. That was fantastic, and actually I think very holy in its way.
My thanks there to Canon Edward Condrey, treasurer at Canterbury Cathedral and one of the organisers of the pilgrimage from Canterbury to Rome along the Via Francigena.